Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 240, being recorded on the 2nd of August, 2018, with special guest Gautam Shah. I'm Sajid, and on Skype with me, I have Cynthia, Kendall, Kale, and of course our special guest Gautam. And before we get started with him on a really interesting topic that I know he's very passionate about, let's just do a quick rundown on the latest news in the Azure space. Who wants to go? Any takers on some of the new items? I know there's quite a few in the show notes here.
Yeah, I can jump in on the blockchain corner and a couple other things I dropped in here. So there's a couple blog posts out here you should take a look at for those who are interested. I've heard some feedback on Twitter and whatnot about blockchain, some more stuff about that on this podcast. Two of them this week, just to point out, is one around our product called the Azure Blockchain Workbench. There's been a new release of that, and there's a lot of different kind of exposure, transparency around the features and the requests that we're getting to add to that product. So you can go check those out. I won't go through them here, but there's a nice article written by Ziad, the PM on the team there, to kind of go through what are the new features that we've added around upgrades and things like that. And then, what are the things we're looking forward to in next release and those kind of things. So if you're interested in that product and that offering, take a look at that. And the other one around blockchain is the Corda. From the R3 guys, they basically have launched an enterprise product. So to date, they basically had a demo up there to allow you to start kind of playing around with Corda, which is their blockchain kind of fabric. And this is the kind of hardened enterprise version that you can spin up right from inside Azure. So go ahead and take a look at that if you're interested. There's a lot of links over there to all the details about that.
Awesome. So it sounds like we're getting a lot of critical mass on blockchain now that we're getting these offerings in the Azure portal, right?
Yep.
That's great. What else? Anything else you guys want to talk about, Kendall, Cynthia? Anything you guys like in the show notes there? I noticed there's one on Ansible. I don't know if you guys recall, we spoke to Brendan Burns, and I think he gave us a kind of rundown on Ansible. It's some kind of like an automation engine of sorts, I suppose. And they've added support for Kubernetes in there now, and especially AKS, creating VMSS clusters, etc. So there's been a bunch of enhancements that have been made to Ansible 2.6 in Azure.
Yeah, and along with that, Tajit, I put another one up there we can drop in the show notes around, and the title of it was Orchestrating Production-Grade Workloads on the Azure Kubernetes Service, but it's a great article. It gives some good links out to, if you've not been involved in this, and if you've been listening to our podcast, you see that we talk about Kubernetes quite a bit. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty earth-changing kind of thing or in the container space. And so you should definitely take a look at that if you haven't looked into it yet. And it's really good about talking about, how this stuff is serious production grade, not just kind of a feature or a product that we have up there. This is something that's real that people are deploying business critical workloads on.
Yep. It's a very good article. Thank you for sharing that, Kale. All right. I think that's a good rundown of all the news. I didn't miss anything, I think. All right, so then let's turn the mic over to our special guest, Gautam. Gautam, thank you very much for joining us today. Please go ahead and introduce yourself, introduce the company that you work for, and also the kind of work that you do in Azure and what you're passionate about there.
Yeah, certainly. Thank you, Sajid. Hello, everybody. My name is Gautam Shah. I work for Applied Information Sciences, sort of a medium-sized consulting company just outside Washington, D.C. area here in Reston. So my background, been doing software development since very early days of Visual C++ 1.0 back in the early 90s. So I have been doing software development primarily, but past 4 or 5 years, I have been exclusively focusing on Azure, and especially automating, providing and creating automated solutions for large customers in Azure. My Azure automation is absolutely my passion, and I use that as a central solution for a lot of solutions, automation solutions that I put in place.
I would definitely second that. He is by far the most power user of Azure automation that I have ever met, and pretty much knows almost everything there is to know about the product. So Gautam, tell us, when you work with customers, how does the discussion of automation or at an Azure automation come into the picture? Like, at what point do you start talking about, automating stuff?
Certainly. So typically when I work with customers, and they happen to be large enterprise customers that have hundreds of developers and very, 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 very large applications, the conversation usually starts around overall Azure architecture with subscriptions and topologies and networks and all of that. And those conversations occur typically with their infrastructure teams. Then when it comes to creation of resources in Azure, the mindset of the typical infrastructure team is to actually do it manually. And that's where I introduce the Azure automation as a runtime engine for infrastructure folks to have their automation solution in place. So over the evolution of infrastructure automation over past few years, right, where from the early days where folks used to order servers and rack and stack to just the virtual machine-based automation to the current trend, which is the self-service and self-healing automation, on that journey for the clients to accelerate on the journey is where Azure automation is introduced.
And typically, you have to talk to do you need some kind of buy-in from customers on this? Is there some kind of level that you need to of folks that you need to speak to get buy-in for automation, or does everybody understand what automation is going to bring to the table here?
So it varies. Most large organizations, especially their CTOs and higher, having read the industry trends. Are already aware of automation, and there is usually a mandate on all of these infrastructure organizations to reduce the time to market from an infrastructure operations perspective, your provisioning, your configuration management, all of that perspective. So they typically are on board with reducing the time to market, but do not know how to accomplish. And it's more of an education is what I find, more than actually trying to persuade them to using persuading them to use an automation platform. And when I explain the various capabilities that Azure automation brings to the table, I found it to be an easy sell.
All right. So since you talked about all the capabilities, maybe you can sell it to us, or try to sell it to us, as to what the capabilities of Azure automation are.
Certainly, absolutely. So let's talk about the evolution, right? So typically in a large organization, you have a central provisioning team that is usually responsible for creation and configuration of resources in Azure. And the way they have been used to in past is they receive a ticket and they have a bunch of scripts that they execute locally. Not very scalable model. It is very similar to having the developer running the code locally on the development machines, right? You don't have a consistent environment for executing the scripts. There is no logging. The access control for the scripts is non-existent since it's running locally on these boxes. There is no integration with other systems. You can't do unattended or scheduled execution. And then there is no central configuration and credential repository that such scripts can tap into. So how do you achieve that? That's where the Azure Automation comes into play. It provides all of these features where the team can use a central environment and a place where the infrastructure is much more robust and repeatable for them to perform these operations. So that's just the runtime benefits of it. The Azure Automation itself has lots of other capabilities that allows it to fit within a large enterprise. So typically in a large enterprise, you need access not only to Azure resources, but also to your on-prem resources. Typically in a large enterprise, they would have the Azure integrated with Azure AD. Azure Automation being a PaaS service won't be able to authenticate with the on-prem infrastructure, right? Azure Automation has a construct of hybrid workers that allows you to run your runbooks that on virtual machines that are connected to your VNets in Azure. And then since the VNets would be connected to your on-prem infrastructure, the runbooks and the code that you run on those hybrid workers have access to the on-prem infrastructure. So it has capabilities that allows integration with your existing on-prem infrastructure. It doesn't need to run in complete isolation.
So, got a quick question on the hybrid workers. Is that something that is that a VM that you have to provision, or is that something, is that part of the service that's offered?
So that since this is a compute or a virtual machine that needs to join a VNet that your enterprise has created, you create these virtual machines, and then you register these virtual machines as hybrid workers on the automation accounts. And so when the Azure Automation accounts receives a request to execute the runbooks, it basically hands it over to the hybrid workers. In reality, the hybrid worker is actually polling the Azure Automation accounts, and it receives the execution request for the runbook, and it executes it.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. All right. So that's you were talking about the evolution of automation. How are things like security and all handled in these scenarios? And you kind of briefly mentioned about security needs for with Azure AD and whatnot. How are these things authenticated with Azure AD?
Certainly. So there are three aspects of security that we have to look at when you look at Azure Automation. First is the security to control who has access to the Azure Automation accounts, who has access to Azure Automation runbooks to execute those runbooks, and who has access to the Azure Automation jobs. Azure has out-of-the-box roles that allows you to control each of these types of access. So that's just access to the Azure Automation runbooks. The second security would be that's the access for humans to access the Azure Automation runbooks. The second aspect of security is if your systems needs to connect to these Azure Automation runbooks. And Azure Automation works in conjunction with the Azure app registrations. And so if your application is registered app in Azure and that registration has sufficient rights, it would be able to access the Azure Automation runbooks. And this becomes important for integration scenarios where you have applications, your source control systems, your release systems that directly need to talk to Azure Automation. And the third aspect of security is the credentials that on the accounts that the Azure Automation, it's that the your runbooks, your code needs to access the various subscription. And that's where you have the credentials stored within Azure Automation that can store the credentials, which you can then retrieve it within your code and then use that credentials, that principle to operate against the various subscriptions and perform various operations on.
Yes, Cynthia, you want to say something? I noticed you were trying to say it.
So kind of shifting gears on the Azure automation, I know that another big part is around configuration and desired state configuration specifically. So the current customer I've been working with, we always have this debate of whether or not a configuration should go into DSC or it should go into part of CI/CD deployment to make sure that we don't have configuration drift. In your opinion, Gautam, what should fall into DSC and what should not fall into DSC?
So the benefit of having it on the DSC is that you prevent configuration drift over a very small period of time. Based on how your LCM is configured, it's checking for configuration drift every 20 minutes, every 10 minutes. That's the benefit of DSC. With the CI/CD, with having the configurations in the CI/CD, you are limited to checking on that configuration drift every time you do a release. If you're a highly efficient organization that's doing releases, say, several times a day, you're still not doing the checks every few minutes that you would get out of DSC. What you don't want to do in the DSC is to put complex configuration logic that has interdependencies between various types of resources. The DSC configuration has to be very atomic in nature that keeps the drift for that particular individual server. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
Good good question and really, very, very good response, Gautam. So just kind of moving on then. So you covered the security aspects of this thing. Let's just kind of maybe just talk about some basics. You mentioned that we can run scripts, right, as part of Azure Automation. Now, do these always have to be PowerShell scripts? I know typically when you're thinking of scripts, you think of PowerShell. Talk about some of the programming aspects of Azure Automation. What can you do or what should you not do in these scripts?
Certainly. So there are Azure Automation supports two types of scripts right now. PowerShell, and I'm not going to say scripts, it supports PowerShell because I'll explain a lot more about what goes in that PowerShell. What are the various types of PowerShell as scripting that you can do? And it also supports Python-based scripting. So let me talk more about the PowerShell. That's my area of expertise and I live and breathe every day. So you can create three types of PowerShell scripts in it. One is you can create your own regular PowerShell scripts that you use on your local machines that you can write and execute on local machines. You can write your regular PowerShell scripts and load it into Azure Automation to create a runbook that executes that script. You can create PowerShell workflows, which uses the workflow construct for long running processes that you have in PowerShell. And then you also have the graphical, which is the vis-a-vis, what you see, what you get, model for creation of runbooks. Now, in conjunction with all three, you can also use what's called as the PowerShell modules. Again, very similar, same as the PowerShell modules that you would create and import from your local machine, those PowerShell modules can also be loaded into your Azure Automation account, or if you're using hybrid workers, you can place them on the hybrid workers. So various flavors of PowerShell are sort of supported in Azure Automation. In terms of do's and don'ts, what you want to do and what you don't want to do, one of the good practices that I have put in place and I have had, and because of that, the solutions have been able to scale and have been able and are flexible, is I encapsulate most of the heavy lifting in your PowerShell modules. And keep the logic in the runbooks minimal to retrieving the environmental values, like your asset values, your like your credential values, and passing it on to the modules. The benefit of that is that your modules become extremely portable. You can use those modules not only on the Azure Automation, but you can also use it locally or on your local machine or your virtual machine. And so your core logic becomes very, very portable. You would want to avoid large amount of code directly placed in the Azure Automation runbooks itself, because the debugging tooling, the single-stepping tooling around Azure, debugging the code in Azure Automation runbook is not really available. You don't have the tools that you have with your local ISC inside the Azure Automation. So those are some of the practices that you want to follow. The overarching approach that you want to take is that this is software, right? And so the infrastructure code that you write in PowerShell is software. So all the good software development and engineering practices that have been prevalent for decades in the regular software development field should also be applied for the code that you write for Azure Automation, your PowerShell that you write for Azure Automation. And that includes having source control repositories, having unit test and integration test for your code, having specific release cycles, having separate environments for testing. So what I mean by that is having separate accounts for your testing, for your production, and things of that sort. Those are some of the good practices for the do's and don'ts for Azure Automation.
So this is Kendall speaking. I wanted to kind of ask you a question just for those of us who haven't had a lot of experience with Azure Automation. What would you say is typically the ways that some customers who start implementing this into their environments kind of dip their toe in the water? Do they typically start with, is there kind of a path to entry for automation, starting with more basic tasks and then moving into other processes? What would you say that path of progression starts to look like when customers do begin utilizing Azure Automation?
So the best way for the customers that have no exposure to automation or infrastructure of code is to start using Azure Automation for your reporting and compliance purposes, right? Because you're not creating, you're not tearing down resources, all of that, and so it has minimal impact. If the fear is too high, if the fear is not too high, the best way to start is to actually start placing scripts in place for provisioning of your basic resources, provisioning of your resources with basic configuration. Say, for example, creation of your virtual machine, create simple runbooks that automates that and places it. And place it in the runbooks for the folks to actually use that for provisioning of virtual machines.
Okay, that's great. So what other thoughts that you can leave with us, Gautam, as it relates to automation? I know, for example, one of the questions I always have is, you talk about automation in terms of, automating virtual machines and cloud services and all that, but it could technically be used for automating anything, right? It doesn't have to be something related to your infrastructure. I think you briefly mentioned compliance reporting and things like that as being another area. Like, where else have you seen automation be used that may not be obvious, for example?
So I did throw in that example for compliance because exactly the reason that you mentioned is that it's not obvious where automation may be viewed as something just for creation of the resources, right? But it could be used for teardown. I mean, a good use is for cost control purposes. You may want to either stop or tear down the resources that you have created and then have it recreated just in time when they are needed. Azure Automation has a way of running scheduled jobs. So if your development and testing organizations are following a particular schedule, You can run the creation, the teardown on the specific schedule that aligns with the work that the development and testing organizations are doing, their timing schedules. So I found that to be a great mechanism for controlling cost. The other area which Azure Automation has just started going into is basically inventory and change tracking. So it is starting to introduce abilities to track the changes that are happening, the configuration changes that are happening on your virtual machines. So it's sort of starting to become a platform that allows you to not only execute your code, but have your code run in conjunction with things that you need for compliance, configuration management, tracking, and things of that sort.
So I know you touched a little bit on cost control. Is there a way that Azure Automation can tell us which resources hasn't been used, or like the get an idea of the usage of different resources you have in your subscription?
So it doesn't have that out of the box. They've started to introduce some of that functionality under inventory management, but it's not completely there where it would be usable right out of the box. And this is where you would need to write solutions, your code that's placed in Azure Automation that surfaces that information.
Yeah, thank you.
Good question.
Excellent. All right, this has been really good, Gautam. You know, it's a lot of information you've thrown at us. I want to kind of ask you one final thing. Just to, in your experience, what is the most complex Azure Automation job or runbook that you have built? Like, how do you see, how complex can this thing get? Like, is there something like too complex, for example?
So, the complexity is where if you have too many runbooks that are chaining together, I have found those models to break down, right? And having a runbook that performs an atomic operation is, and then using that runbook for that specific purposes as opposed to trying to chain it. So I was in a scenario where we had four different runbooks that chained with each other to perform the different to perform a different operation. That is too complex. The way to structure that is to actually create separate modules for each of those areas, and then pull in those modules within a single runbook, and then execute the commandlets from those modules in that particular runbook. That way you have a better overall control of what you need to perform.
Got it. I think you've driven the point home well enough that we got to go with modules as much as we can.
If I didn't say that enough, come back. Yeah. Time, so.
That's great. Well, this has really been awesome. Thank you very much, Gautam, for coming on our show, and really appreciate it. If you have any, favorite links, resources that you normally turn to when you have to look up information related to automation, you can send them my way, and what we'll do is we'll add them to the show notes, along with the episode as resources, so that our listeners will have access to them. All right?
I certainly will. Thank you so much for the opportunity to talk here. It was so much fun.
Thank you, Gautam. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.